Good morning, everyone, and welcome to NSPS Radio Hour. We're glad to have everybody with us again this morning. As is typical this winter, I'm sitting in a sea of white again this morning, although today it's not snow, it's the normal paperwork on my desk. So, although we did have a little snow over the weekend, not a whole lot, but we've had a snowy winter here. My guest today, by the way, is Robert Zierman. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Actually, Zierman, but
Zierman.
Close,
okay.
Yeah.
Close enough. Robert and I met, earlier this month, I guess, wasn't it, Robert, at the State Surveyors Conference?
Association of Washington annual conference up at the Tulalip Casino just north of Everett.
Here. Yeah, that was another name I had trouble pronouncing until they told me what it was when I called up there, the Tulalip part. But I finally ended up getting that right. But nonetheless, we're really happy to have you with us on the show today. For the audience, Robert is the principal attorney at Justice Smiles, BLLC, primarily assisting clients in resolving disputes with their neighbors. And that probably within itself, Robert, explains to people why you would be at a surveyor's conference.
Yes, that's exactly right. I'm not a PLS. I should disclose that up front. But I rely on the work of surveyors all the time to inform what I'm doing, and I take quite a different approach, I think, than most attorneys that one may not fully understand what your audience does, and two, wants to just get in there and you know, fight it out, because that's what a lot of attorneys seek to do up front.
Yeah, it's in talking with you and reading through some of the materials you provided, I found it really interesting that the approach you've taken. And I guess maybe a good way to start with our audience is to give them some background on you and how you got into this side of things, and then talk some about how those opinions were formed.
Yeah. Well, I guess the long range view. Excuse me. I came up to Seattle and wanted to get into international business, and I was always, I guess in part the reason for doing so was my interest in maps and all the rest. I studied Chinese, went overseas and became a China hand, and have both lived and studied and worked over in China, but ultimately decided to come back. And in doing so, I learned a lot of negotiation skills because the Chinese don't have the most strong laws, but they are very good at negotiation. And I had also looked at adverse possession in particular as a way of trying to depict the law in a three-dimensional way, and that seemed to just be perfect as far as resonating with land surveyors, and I could explain that it's a little bit detailed and hard to grasp perhaps just in a radio show, but from that, those kind of confluence of things, I started realizing, okay, if I better understood and took a more of a quantitative approach to the law, I could be a good diagnostician and hopefully also use my negotiating skills to negotiate out the conflict instead of ramping it up and leading people into further conflict, because they are neighbors and they're going to be living next to each other, and that's just not good.
Well, that certainly is the charge, if you will, I guess, of the surveyor in a sense, in terms of helping people settle their issues, whatever they may be. Oftentimes, though, perhaps because of the law, the way the laws are written, or perhaps the way we're brought up, as we Southerners would say, in our profession, that whole idea of being the facilitator for negotiation doesn't necessarily resonate as much as maybe it should. And maybe you've run into that in dealing with us surveyors from time to time.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about this after listening to actually one show in particular, and we spoke briefly about it, but was the one which you had Gary Kent and Jeff Lucas and I think it was Brian Blair on several weeks ago, and it made me think, you know, the survey profession, if it is to the point where you can pretty much walk your bounds or, you know, figure things out as far as your boundaries with your cell phone, that much can be verified by the average public. But there are skills and abilities that the survey community brings to the table that are completely unique, and the laws are inhibiting things that can be done even more so, like bringing ideas as to how to resolve problems, which, in all honesty, I think most surveyors have a much better sense of the particular laws and how real property works beyond what a lot of, I mean, certainly the majority of attorneys and perhaps even some, you know, I'm not going to go into percentages, but some of the real property attorneys don't understand the law perhaps as much either. So there's a lot of opportunity, I think, provided that surveyors are somehow allowed to both identify the line, which they still do regardless as to who's their client, and then from that, also start to present perhaps some solutions so the conflict doesn't amp up.
So it's more of an interactive kind of situation than sometimes the way we see ourselves is, well, I've done my job and I've shown the results of my work, so there it is. Do with it as you will.
Yeah, and if you put a stake in someone else's yard, then they're gonna, you know, the neighbor's probably gonna be quite offended, and you know, a lot of times they just see it as a betrayal, and you know, that's not gonna be something that helps promote neighborliness per se. But between, you know, the quitclaim deeds and easements, reversionary interests, you know, potentially a lease, or you know, there's a whole spectrum of remedies that don't involve marching off to war. That I think that it would be ideal if the surveyor was empowered to start raising those particular concepts very early on and start managing their clients and perhaps even be opposing, you know, the neighbor in that regards as well.
Yeah, and I guess with surveyors in general, the thought might be more along the lines of, do they feel prepared to do those things? And I think that's one of the things that's interesting about this discussion, because I think you're right in terms of the type of people we are as surveyors and the way our thought processes work in terms of resolving problems. But I'm not sure that there's a vast majority, maybe not even a majority among our peers, my peers, who feel as though they have those skills you're talking about that may seem inherent to those looking at the situation of what surveyors should be doing. And I don't know if that comes down to an educational process. And when I say educational process, I'm not necessarily talking about formal education. I'm talking about learning how to work with people. And that seems to be an obstacle sometimes. I don't know if you've encountered that or not, but just being that, I don't know if mediator is the right word here, but being that person who can bring the people together. I think some of my fellow surveyors would think maybe we don't have those skills. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is kind of a learned process in general, because, you know, conflict, no one enjoys conflict. I mean, it's one of those things where conflict's over there, and, you know, maybe I'll watch it from over here on this side of the street, but I certainly don't want to, you know, other than maybe a fireman or a policeman, jump right in the middle of it. But I guess if it can be managed up front, you know, there is an opportunity, and this is something that I was reflecting on a little bit this weekend too. You know, I have a particular case going on that, you know, a boundary line adjustment just simply won't work. That would be probably the first course of action, you know, provide the two parties can work it out, because there's, you know, like, in particular, there's an eaves overhang situation. And it dawned on me, well, you know, maybe we could set up some sort of air rights and take, you know, what we've had originally with the bird's eye view survey, and then also, you know, one or two more side views that show those overhanging eaves, and then just have a reversionary interest. And so the thought that came from that is, if you have, you don't need everyone doing it, but if you have more of a culture established where, you know, no one's running straight to the mattresses as soon as the stake goes in, but, you know, there is an assumption that there are ways to resolve the problem, you know, let's just get together and work around it, you know, there can be more work for you know, general surveying work as well, because here's a pretty neat additional you know, return to the property to do additional survey work.
That's actually a good thought to pick up on. We're right up at our first break here, if I'm looking at my clock correctly. So let's go ahead and do that. We'll pick up on that thought when we come back.
Attention surveyors. Are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com, and thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick steaks are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden steaks, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about Quick Steaks, go to www.quicksteak.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details. Or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're back this morning with Robert Zierman. I got it right this time, right?
You bet.
Okay. and I'm assuming everybody's been with us from the beginning, but Robert is an attorney out in Washington. Now, are you actually located in Seattle?
Yes, I am. I mean, yeah. Just northwest of the downtown core in the lovely little district of Magnolia.
Well, I know I think we've probably sparked the interest of our audience in defining what this topic is about today, which, as I said, may be foreign to the thinking of many of my fellow professionals in terms of the fact that being the problem solver rather than the provider of just the evidence is a good business opportunity for the surveyor, but also a good professional opportunity for the surveyor, and one that you certainly believe in based on your writings and the cases that you've done. I was just curious, and I know you were talking about a particular case, so we can follow up on that, but as we go through the segment, I was just curious how you what was it in the practice that you saw that led you to the conclusion that surveyors were the right folks? And then I know you had a booth at the conference. I don't know how long you've been attending the Washington conference, but I was just curious how many disciples you've been able to pull in from the surveyors there in the area.
Well, yeah, I've got a few people that will refer regularly to me, which is quite nice. And of course, I try to reciprocate that as well. Not only just the normal social graces of business reciprocation, but also, I'd like to have future work go to people that kind of understand that concept. As far as your question, as to the Land Surveyors Association, they've been 3 years in conference up at Tulalip in Everett, and then the first one, and I've been to all three, the first one before that that I had gone to was over in Spokane, and that was a joint conference with Idaho. So it's been about 4 years of actually attending the conferences, and I guess I see it this way. There is a lot of apathy by a lot of people as to what the real needs are of these to me, the client, all of our clients, whether they're the title companies or the real estate agents or the attorneys, who's going in and just saying, hey, most people don't have $50,000 to get in a war with their neighbor, and of course the aftermath of that is not pleasant either, and so there's a real need there. And from what I understand, and this is probably something that would be better for you and your audience to kind of clarify, but at least up here and just anecdotally speaking with a few surveyors, if they go out, they send a field crew out in the city at least, they'll probably find encroachments about half the time their field crew goes out. So there's a lot of sleeping dogs out there that need to be sorted out, or someone else is going to come in after the fact and potentially have a big problem.
So, and of course the encroachments part always becomes a big deal, and you probably are right. For those who work in the, for lack of a better term, I'll say the city environment, maybe is a good way to put it. I guess that likelihood is perhaps higher, just because the nature of the parcels of land being smaller in most cases, and people trying to do as many things on their property as they possibly can, build fences and flower beds and driveways and all those kind of things. So your premise then would be that when the surveyor discovers those kind of things, that's when is a good time to go in and help people understand what they are and perhaps why they occurred. Because I think that's one of the things that, I don't know if mistrust is the right word, but But when something comes up like that, it almost seems like people think, well, somebody did this on purpose.
And that
may or may not have been the case.
In fact, I think it's often not the case. And unfortunately, up here, our law back in 1984 changed. There's a seminal case which I could name, but for most of your audience, it wouldn't mean much. But basically, it threw out any type of analysis, a subjective analysis. And I don't know as to other states if they want to analyze or need to analyze whether it was a mistake or it was some sort of purposeful or knowingly going in and trying to move the stakes or move, you know, plan a line of trees or bushes and move the line of occupation. But my whole thought on that is it's very akin to, and I've written kind of extensively about this, it's akin to negotiable instruments law, and I'll try to explain this very quickly that makes sense. Banking law is very, I mean, it's extremely precise because there's been so much litigation, and of course it involves money, and it's pretty clear cut. And so the idea is that, say I've got a bank book that I left out there at the conference table, and someone picks it up. Someone, you know, he wouldn't have been a surveyor, but someone picked it up and ran off and wrote a bunch of checks on it. And so that person then, you know, moves out of country or whatever. They're gone. So who does this thing get adjudicated between me and the person that took those checks? Well, in negotiable instruments law, checks, it's me because I didn't safeguard that checkbook unless the person that received those checks knew of the problem, knew the person that wrote it or on its face that check was inaccurate. And so what adverse possession law, at least in my opinion, is all about is to try to solve a problem after the bad actor is gone. And, you know, people buy in oftentimes, and they don't know where the line is. The other person doesn't know where the line is. And so this is some way to solve it. But everyone's assuming that it might be the other person's problem that caused this whole issue. And this is what Jeff Lucas keeps talking about, is because we're people that are perceived we identify the problem, and because, I think because there's no current ability to resolve the problem effectively, or the culture isn't there, and that's not just with the surveyors, that's pretty much across the board. Because the surveyors, though, are the ones that identify the problem, they're misperceived as producing the problem, and that's not the case. They're just pointing it out.
So then in that case where we, the surveyor, come in and find the problem, I don't know how much you've studied the various state laws. Of course, you know what they are in the state of Washington with regard to what surveyors are allowed to do. Your premise then is that the ability for surveyors to, maybe, if I don't know if officially is the right word, become more involved in helping people resolve those problems than they're currently allowed to do. And when I say allowed to do, I'm not sure that's actually written down in words or if it's just the protocol that's been established over time. So you're thinking there would need to be some kind of a change in the way the laws are written, perhaps?
Yeah, perhaps. What we have up here in Washington for escrow agents, predominantly, you know, the most attorneys, that's an area that is a little bit too it doesn't produce enough income, and there's plenty of work, and so what they've done is make it so that there are people that aren't attorneys, but they can, there's a scope of work that's carved out for them to do that type of work. And what I think would be ideal is if it was recognized, because the courts, they don't like to try to adjudicate these matters. They've got a lot of other types of things to worry about than a few extra blades of grass here and there. And so if the surveyor was also entitled to, you know, there was some kind of a limited practice area where they could go in and advise or mediate, I think that would be ideal. And it's not because you're coming, you know, up from a lower level of knowledge. It's actually in many respects because the surveyors have this abundance of knowledge that they can come down and apply to a situation, and they can see it. Now, the dealing with the personalities, that can be very difficult, but if it's managed up front before the war has ratcheted up and there's that tit for tat, that is so much more ideal than throwing the meat in front of the lions and you get someone that thinks that, oh yeah, I studied a adverse possession for a day and a half in law school, so I can jump in there and make it happen. It's like just about anything. It's more complex, the deeper you go into it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, I think, and we're a few seconds away from the break, so I won't get into my next question until we come back from the break. But it does raise an interesting point in terms of the knowledge base. You know, who has the knowledge and what's the assumption of who has the knowledge, I think, is another important part of that. So I hope I wrote my timing down right this time, and if I did, then we are probably right about the time for a break, so let's do that.
And here's something new from Schonstedt. Did you know that Schonstedt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Quick steaks are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden steaks, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick steaks, go to www.quicksteak.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstedt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details. Or visit www.schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back for our next segment with Robert Zierman. Today we're talking about an interesting topic, and Robert, I'm going to be surprised if I don't get some feedback from our audience on our topic today, just from the perspective of this this sort of a new idea, or at least I think it's a fairly new idea in terms of bringing the surveyor more into the resolving the issues thing, and perhaps keeping it out of the courts if possible. And one of the things you said earlier, I want to ask you this question related to our contest. Our sponsor, Parker Davis Quick Stakes, has a contest every week. It's called Quick Stakes Contest at AmericasWebRadio.com. And the first person who emails in the answer you're going to give me will win something from our sponsor today. Something you said earlier with regard to in the area where you work in the cities, it seems as though, in my mind, I thought that was a pretty high percentage of the times that you find an encroachment. And what did you say that percentage was?
I said it was about 50% of the time, and that was based on my inquiry of the surveyor and you know, just checking around with some of the other ones. So that might be germane to Seattle, but it might be across cities in general. But that's kind of been what I've been going on.
Yeah, so the answer we're looking for today is 50% of the time. It'd be interesting if any of our listeners come back and let us know what their experiences have been. Years ago, I did some survey work in the District of Columbia. At one point, they stopped allowing Virginia and Maryland licensees, both of which I'm one, to practice there without a license in the district. And I wasn't unhappy about that because it's kind of a tough place to work just because of the way everything's laid out. If you understand it, how it was all done, it's not quite so bad. But finding those types of situations is fairly commonplace there as well. So maybe it's just the Washington and the Washington, I don't know, but I suspect it's probably true that some type of encroachment occurs on a fairly regular basis. One of the things you were talking about before we went to break was the knowledge base. Who had the better knowledge base in terms of working to resolve or advise upon or mediate these matters? And one of the things that's curious to me, and I think to surveyors in general, is when these cases come up, attorneys get involved, of course. And so perhaps the presumption is that the attorneys that are brought in are well-versed in all of the law and all the precedent that would be related to this particular case. But if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, that may not be true, that perhaps that knowledge base among the average attorney out there in your local township or whatever might not lend itself to being the right person to try to resolve these issues.
Yeah, I think that's probably about right. I mean, most trial attorneys, they understand trial procedure, you know, civil rules of procedure. These are state issues because it relates the land almost exclusively, unless, I guess, you know, say railroad or pipeline or something that crosses jurisdictions. But you know, they might know their way around a courtroom real well, and you know, of course, that's the typical idea that the at least in criminal law is, gosh, got the guy off on a technicality. And that's where a lot of lawyering occurs. But we're talking about substance. At least I am. I believe the substance is what ought to be driving things, and that is something that I believe the vast majority of surveyors have, they're far beyond the vast majority of attorneys are. With respect to their education. And so we'll get something like someone that does personal injury one day and then a state law the next, and then, you know, all of a sudden they're trying a adverse possession case, quiet title, or, you know, some sort of view easement or whatever, and they don't, you know, I mean, they can research the law, but they don't have this background, you know, that they've built up and have kind of a gestalt view and understanding of the cases. And so what I've done is actually taken a lot of the cases since that one that seminal case that I was talking about, just to put a name on it, it's called Chaplain v. Sanders, and all the sufficiency cases that talk about how many facts are needed to discern whether it's an adverse possession case or not. That goes to the appellate level, and that's a huge qualifier because who goes to the appellate level? The people that have the money to continue the fight on. And so that skews things quite a bit. But of those cases, then I've kind of spreadsheeted all the different facts out so I can look at not just the kind of the small rules that come out of the various cases, but also, okay, how likely is it, say, when you have a enclosing fence as opposed to just a line fence or a jogged fence or a fence that's halfway broken or hasn't been maintained, how does that spin out? Or, in certain, we've got three different appellate districts up here in Washington that feed, of course, up to the Supreme Court. And so what is the general sense out of this district or that district with respect to the number of facts that are necessary to show that there's been sufficient adverse possession to go ahead and award it. And through this study, which doesn't have a huge, I guess statistics, they'd call it the number of the sample set size, but it's sufficient enough to identify, I think, that you almost need at least two different facts on the ground to show it. So someone, say, mowing their lawn up to the cement line, that's just not going to do it. You need to, you need to have your mowing the grass up to the cement line and maybe a tree line planted, at the very least to be able to secure adverse possession. Well, the thought behind all this is if you have more of an ability to diagnose where a case might be down the line, you can understand the likelihood of the end results and make your decisions up front and hopefully get people to calm down and make their or come to a resolution now at a much cheaper cost. And so that's going to keep the peace. That's the premise that I'm working on, that keeps the peace and keeps things going neighborly between people. They do have to spend some money, but it's not going to be so astronomical as to completely ruin a neighbor relationship.
Is there any kind of statistical analysis or anything like that in terms of the various aspects of adverse possession and which of those, if any, are more likely to be the one that decides the issue in a particular case? I was just curious about that. I'm assuming there isn't anything like that, but I was just curious.
Don't have I was an econ major in college, and so I had some exposure to econometrics and regression analysis, but that was such a long time ago. I just, it's, some of this is a little bit anecdotal yet. What we have up here in Washington State is a firm that I'm actually quite, excited about Their name is Tableau Software, and I think there's some competitors of theirs. But anyways, they do data visualization, which allows people to see the data. You know, you got the rows and columns of information. You know, see this information. And so what I tried to do is make it so you could see, you know, okay, there were about 5 facts here, and look, they got adverse possession. You know, here they only had 2 facts, and they didn't get it on this particular case and all that. And so it gives that, like I say, that gestalt view and allows someone to drill down. But it's not as, and I know surveyors would probably prefer things to be really mathematically accurate. You know, social science is just, you know, I mean, you can get somewhat there, and I would imagine with more work going by the way of computers, and that's happening in the legal arena as well. You know, it's not just an issue for surveyors. That's for certain. But there are things that you can hold on to, and people, you know, want to hold on to the strategy and being able to identify things that, you know, do what the computers can't. So
yeah, that's an interesting concept, but what you're talking about is at least you have some more, I don't know if better is the right word, but you have more information at your disposal when you're beginning to think about what those solutions might be, I guess, if I'm understanding this correctly.
Yeah, more exactly. You've got a different, this is a completely different way of approaching it, I think, as well. You know, I was handing out, you were asking about my status as a vendor. That was the first time I was a vendor at the Surveyors Conference up there in Washington. You know, I was handing out a document that kind of showed, you know, these bar charts as to length of, you know, sufficiency. So, you know, their length under certain circumstances might be, per case, would be 2 in this case, or 3 or 4 or 5. And then, and what was interesting, and this was what that group that I mentioned just a moment ago, that does
the data. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit further when we come back from our next break. We're right at the break point, so let's explore that further.
Attention, surveyors. Are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com, and thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And welcome back for our last segment today with Robert Zehrman. We're talking about a really interesting topic for us surveyors, and that is, what is the potential for surveyors to become more directly involved in helping to resolve issues they uncover? Is that a pretty good way of stating this, Robert?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And we've talked about a number of things. Talked about the knowledge base and the percentage of time that we find things to be a problem, so to speak, or even sometimes, I guess, a perceived problem when we get the call to begin with. Somebody thinks there's a problem, so they call the surveyor to come out. And you were talking about some of the information that could be compiled to get a sense of the way things may go, and you talked about the bar charts and that kind of thing that you've written about. And as a matter of fact, speaking of that, we probably should give a web address to drive people to your website to find us some of this information.
Yeah, I've been blogging. I haven't been as good most recently, but I'll try to. You know, if people comment, I'll be reassured that there's people out there listening. My blog site is boundarydisputelaw.com, and it's mainly for out here in Washington State. But I have had comments from further afield, and those comments are certainly welcome. So, you know, please, if anyone wants to make a comment, you know, and up, down, sideways, indifferent, feel free to jump in there.
Yes, interesting, you were talking about the blog site. That's something I'm not very good at doing. There's basically totally inability to do it. How do you find that to be as a means of communication? Do you find it to be a really good way to have conversation with people?
It's been a little bit mixed. For me, I've put out quite a bit of information, and it's, I think it's served in many respects to help me think through different ideas and be novel in my thinking of this and that. And I haven't had as much feedback. Now, part of that is always, you know, if you're not regularly putting something out there, you know, at least once a week, twice a week, you know, who's going to be really following you and making the comments? So it might have been a little bit of my own part. And, you know, I'm a head chef and bottle washer at my firm, and so, you know, so sometimes some things need to go, and that has been it. But if I get the feedback, I'll certainly spend more time on it. And the other thing too that I've realized from another attorney that has been extremely successful with his blog, he blogs about China up here in Seattle, is if you make that regular commitment and just, you know, you're writing all the time with inquiries or whatever, just repurpose these things is basically what he says. You know, scrub them up of the names associated with any of the cases, you know, and probably wait until after the case is resolved so it doesn't prejudice your case in any way. But if you get that done, you have quite a bit of content that you may not have even realized you had. So, you know, I'll do my best to get.
Yeah, with all the different kinds of communication available to us today, it's hard to even know which way to turn. You know, we're a really small staff here too, so, you know, we're concerned about, is Facebook the right thing? Is Twitter the right thing? Is blogging the right thing? And maybe the answer is yes to all of those. I don't know. But
yes to all of those, as long as you just say yes to one of them.
yeah, that's probably true. You know something you said early on that I found interesting, and maybe becoming lost in our country, was you said at the very beginning, you learn negotiating skills by interacting with the folks in China, and that was precipitated in large part because of perhaps them not having a system in place where they have a legal remedies to go to, or at least courts to go to. I found that to be very, very interesting, and I'm thinking back over time, you know, and maybe our grandparents' era, It seemed that negotiating skills and bartering skills and all those other skills that people had seemed to be missing in our current world, which is sad because I find it interesting when people are willing to talk things through and find a negotiation.
Yeah, and there are, you know, there are books to talk about. You know, there's the seminal book, Getting to Yes, you know, about mediation, negotiation. You know, there's some great things out there, but we have bad examples in the leadership that we've chosen, too. I mean, I don't want to take this in that direction, but you know, we do need to have a country that ultimately is going to be, you know, working together, you know, to solve problems, because problems exist, and the pace of change, technology is driving change, and change creates conflict, and so are we going to resolve conflict and get ahead of the change and get ahead of the conflict that that comes out in its wake, or are we going to let the wave of changes, you know, swamp us under? I think surveying has a very bright future ahead of it, provided that it recognizes that technology is changing the very nature of doing work, and same thing with law. You know, there's a lot of law, you know, e-discovery and other aspects that are being sent overseas. You know, in technology, there's cheaper ways of doing a lot of things, either because of technology, with technology. But there are other things that, because of people's education and abilities, and also location too, that make us uniquely qualified to resolve problems. And what are we here for? To you know, defend rights for, you know, that are fairly meaningless, or to promote goodwill and neighborliness? You know, I don't, you know, I don't like the ethic that a lot of people have, or the idea that a lot of people have towards attorneys, because attorneys are generally supposed to be a helpful profession, but it, the way it practice, you know, plays out in practice, as zealous advocates and whatnot, can be quite the opposite in our perception, and that's, you know, hence the jokes for attorneys. Well, you know, the survey profession certainly doesn't want anything like that either.
That's exactly true. Yeah, that's very, very true. Something you said there a few moments ago was, I found very interesting in terms of the technology that we all live with, and we in the surveying profession tend to think it may have affected us more so than anybody, just because of the tools we use being so dramatically changed over time, and that everybody deals with those same kind of issues. We're not unique in that manner. But getting back to what you were talking about earlier, some of the previous discussions that you'd heard on the show with Jeff and Gary and Bruce and those guys, that whole idea that, yeah, we've got great technology that helps us gather information and process information. The key is not to allow that to replace getting to the right answer, or doing the due process to analyze that information properly.
Yeah, I think technology just helps you get up the mountain quicker, and, you know, if it can help you get up the mountain 80% quicker than normal, that's great. You know, but if you're going to summit, you know, you still have to charge up that last 20%, and that is the hardest 20% of, you know, the that there is, and it takes a lot of hard work by people that are smart and have figured it out and know, I think, how to interact with people, because ultimately all business, no matter, you know, how, you know, where it is, relates to people and resolving the issue that a person has. You know, it has a technical nature, but you know, it's driven by the person's understanding. So there's always an educational piece. There's an emotional piece, especially in this, in you know, this side that I work in. And then there's the technical piece. And so what technology is doing is it's debundled some of these different pieces from each other, and you have to analyze them a little bit more separately. But then how do you put that bundle back together and resell it effectively? I think that's really the what's going to be the difference between, you know, and this isn't just the survey profession. Again, this is pretty much every profession. Whether you're going to be able to move ahead or not. I mean, this for some people, this might be the absolute pinnacle. For others, this might be the inflection point. You know, going up. You know, this is just the beginning of a new stage. There's going to be a lot more to come of good things. But I think, you know, we have to accept what technology is doing and then figure out what is the value that we can bring, you know, me as a lawyer, you know, your audience as surveyors, to people, to the public, to our clients and consumers.
Well, that's absolutely true, and I know we are only a minute or so from being over for the day, but so I want to thank you for being with me and certainly for bringing such thought-provoking ideas to the audience, not only from the perspective of what surveyors can be doing in the whole process of resolving issues they uncover, but this last part in particular in figuring out how to meld all those things together. So thanks again for being with me. It's been great to have you on the show. I really appreciate it very much, and I'm sure my audience does as well. And hopefully we'll hear from some of those folks and start some dialogue.
Well, thank you so much, Kurt, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again. Hope to talk to you soon.
You bet. Cheers.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.